Cool. Okay. If you could just say your name and what you had for breakfast to check the levels.
Oh, sure. My name is AJ, and I've just had this cup of guayusa tea. That's guayusa, G-U-A-Y-U-S-A tea.
Good to plug the USA in there.
Yes, USA all the way.
It's part of the Constitution. You have to include it in any brand name.
I pledge allegiance to sell my country at every possible moment.
Yeah. Okay.
Hello and welcome to Spieling the Beans with me, Dom Stevens, the storytelling podcast in which storytellers tell their stories about telling stories. If we had a bigger budget, we could afford more words in the bio, but there we are. My first guest is perhaps best known as the star of The Book of Mormon, playing Elder Cunningham in the iconic production across three continents. He was also a writer on South Park, one of the creators of the Very Potter musical, and is currently appearing in his Edinburgh Fringe debut. Over tea in his Cowgate kitchen, we discussed stand-up Starkid Sondheim and Stephen Colbert. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome disappointingly no relation of Sherlock, Mr. A.J. Holmes. A.J., thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're so, so welcome.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks for coming into my kitchen with these delightful little pom-pom
mics. It's such a nice kitchen. It's roomy. You've got almost throne-like chairs.
We do have throne-like chairs, it seems fitting.
Yeah. We're in a very castle-heavy city.
Mm-hmm. Very castle-heavy.
Because, and beautiful segue here, we're speaking in Edinburgh at the Fringe, and you're selling out right, left and centre with your show, but not right now.
That's right.
How are you finding Edinburgh audiences?
I'm loving it. I mean, I've never done anything like this. My theatre, my venue is literally in a sewer, underbelly Cowgate. It feels underground. It's really cool, and the fact that people are coming is blowing my mind because it's my first time doing anything like this. So that word of mouth is spreading. I mean, I know there are some people who are like people who know me from Twitter or Instagram that are coming, but there also seem to be a great number of people that are coming just from word of mouth, and that's probably the coolest thing of all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what got you interested in storytelling as a career in the first place?
I mean, I've always been interested in, I was the kid, memorizing other people's routines and doing stand-up on the bus, on the way back and forth from the middle school musical. I got up and did Brian Regan's whole routine and was killing on that bus, killing. But I've always done musical theater. I went to school for that, and my career started taking off quite quickly doing that. And that kind of took up the majority of my 20s, but I've always hired this secret desire to do my own stuff and say my own words and, break free of the restrictions of a script and blocking and all those things, all those pesky things that come with a professional musical. So when my last job was finally done, I talked to my friend Zach Zucker, and he, in a few lines, just said, please let me produce your show and come to Edinburgh. And I just jumped on board.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the last show you were referring to there, is that The Book of Mormon?
That's the one.
What first attracted you to such an iconic role?
Oh, God. I mean, as an actor, you just audition for everything that comes your way. So it's what attracted them to me, and I have no idea, I've played Elder Cunningham, who doesn't traditionally look anything like I look, so I walked to that audition going, there's not a chance in hell that I'll get this role, and then for some reason I got a call back and another call back, and before too long I was in front of Matt Trey and Casey Nicola and like 20 other people. I literally dropped all my side pages all over the floor and like had my ass up to them, picking them up, which they probably thought was just a really strong audition choice, but it was just genuinely what happened.
Oh, that wasn't you doing a bit.
No, that's just genuinely went wrong, but I guess it went right,
Yeah. It just a natural for the role.
Yeah.
Clearly in that regard.
Yeah, exactly.
The show has had a phenomenal run. Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's been so popular?
At the time it came out, it was like, it felt, to me, knowing South Park, it felt like it could have been even more irreverent.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing what these guys are capable of, it was almost like, oh, that's a bit tame.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for the Broadway community, it was just shocking enough that it felt really dirty and really like, oh man, this is so wrong. But its heart is so clearly in the right place. I mean, they describe it as like a love letter to atheists, you know. an atheist love letter to religion. That's it. And it is. Religion ends up coming off, you know, really, really well in it. And it's like, they, you know, South Park has always been kind of equal opportunity offenders. Mm. So I think it's just formatted and structured so well. It's hard to fault it, you know. It goes some touchy places, but overall, you just walk out with this warm, fuzzy feeling. And it's goddamn hysterical. You just don't see many musicals that objectively funny. Plus the amazing performances, the original cast, and what a moment that was. You know, I just think, it also did really well with not putting bootlegs online for so long. There was this thought that you really have to see the show in order to have the experience. And the management team and the production team really kept that perception alive for years after it opened, where you have to be here to experience it, you know. And I think that's driven ticket sales all over. I mean, we've played Salt Lake City and it's gone well, you know.
It does seem to be surprisingly popular with its main subject.
Yeah.
Which, do you know if Trey and Matt were expecting that or more of a backlash?
No, I mean, they I think they just wrote it because they were interested in Mormons, you know. And they sort of, they leave that for later, because I mean, you're here, you're workshopping it for 5 or 6 years, so you're not really thinking about that quite yet.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the Mormons are really good at branding themselves, you know. Yeah. I mean, they started taking out full page ads in the programs.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, you've seen the show, now read the book. The book is always better, you know? The musical may provide entertainment for an evening, but the book will provide enlightenment for a lifetime, you know. And they you know, they're the happiest, politest people in the world, you know. If you're hung out with Mormons, they're so nice, you know. I had Mormon friends growing up. I still have more. They're the nicest people you've ever met, you know. I had Mormon friends come see me in the show. I don't know if they really liked it, but they politely smiled and said they did, you know.
And the smartest dressed too.
Oh, quite. Yeah. Very attractive people. Yeah. All around. No, and they lend themselves so readily to the form of musical theater.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what Matt and Trey saw and Bobby saw in the beginning. It was like, oh, these people just so naturally sing and dance.
Yeah. And you've taken it all around the world. I came and saw the production in Toronto, so I feel like I went to the one city you didn't play in.
That's right. I've still never even been to Toronto, which is wild. I've been so close to Toronto for so long. I've been to Kitchener, I've been to London, Canada, I've been to Winnipeg, I've been to all these cities right
the
around.
The big cities.
Yeah, the biggest cities in Canada. I went on a tour all across Canada. Kitchener. Winnipeg. Yeah. That's in Canada. Yeah, Edmonton, Calgary. Seriously. I went Vancouver. That was the one. There you go. There's an actual city.
The LA of the North.
I'm offending so many people.
Yeah.
The LA of the North, indeed. Yeah.
Now, you've mentioned South Park a lot there. And I think you've managed to achieve what every fan of a TV show has managed to do, which is to go from an adoring viewer to being invited to the writer's room.
Yeah.
How does someone do that?
It was what I still am in disbelief that that's part of my story. I mean, it's just because I had done Mormon for so long, and I think they knew that, you know, I had this, you know, I'm so grateful for Mormon and everything it brought to my life, including that I got to work on South Park. But they knew that I wanted to be a writer, and they knew I wanted to be a creative, and here I was, you know, doing Groundhog Day, doing the same thing every day, and they knew that part of it was sort of crushing my soul very slowly. So I think they just recognized that. And the offer was initially just come for one episode, you know, and just sit in with us and, you know, you'll learn a lot. It'll be a great experience for you. And I was like, yes, please. Cause these guys are my idols. And then I showed up and they just never, I don't know. I think I just kept quiet enough where they never said go home. So one episode went by, two episodes went by, three episodes went by. Then they're like, do you want to keep coming? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Yes, I'd like to keep getting paid to work at South Park. Are you kidding me? So I just kept showing up and suddenly the whole season went by, you know? And I mean, look, let's be real. When Bill Hader and Trey Parker and Vernon Chapman are in a room, you know, Josh Gad, Matt Stout, when these people are in a room, like, for me to take up any oxygen seems really arrogant, you know? So a lot of the time was spent just me, ha-ha, yes, oh, that's quite funny, yes. Oh, I was good, yep, you said it better, that's really good, you know? But it was even the moments where, like, oh, wow, he just said the thing that I was sort of thinking, You know, that means I'm in the same room that they're in, you know, like that means I'm here riding the same wave. And that was really cool. And the other really cool thing about it for me was that they work so last minute, and so do I. And I've always sort of looked down on myself and beaten myself up about like, why do you only do things at the last minute? Why can't you plan why can't you just sit down 2 weeks before the assignment's due and start mapping it out, you know? But here these guys have institutionalized a process where every episode is done entirely in 6 days, right? They start coming up with the idea and they animate it and they write it literally all at the same time over the course of 6 days. And the final night, they're just there all night and the coffee truck comes at 11 p.m. and that's just how they plan it, you know? And so it made me go, oh, I can do that too. I don't have to feel bad about myself. You know, this can just be my process if I wanted to, as is evidenced by my Fringe show, a lot of which was written the night before the first performance.
It keeps it topical. It keeps it fresh.
It certainly does. And it just seems to be, like, my creativity is like Brigadoon. This is a really niche musical theater reference, but my creativity is an island that only shows up once every 7 years, right before a deadline, you know. I only have access to it for 24 hours, but it's beautiful when it's here.
It's a wonderland, I'm sure.
My creativity is a wonderland. Yes, thank you.
That's the title for the second show.
Uh-huh. 2.5 stars.
Why, that does seem a unique process in terms of how a TV show is put together.
Yeah.
Why is it still unique in that regard? As opposed to the pilots, which seem to be written about 8 months or more beforehand.
I mean, and most animated shows are shipped over to some other country to be animated as well. Like, they'll finally finish the script and then send it somewhere else. But South Park has all the animation in-house, so Trey can literally run over and go, oh, no, change this bit, or give a few more seconds here, and then go back to the writer's room and keep working on something, and back to the animators, and they're all coming in showing him mock-ups of new characters, and he's like, yeah, do that, you know. it's more like SNL than anything else.
Yeah, it does seem to have that vibe of that sort of intense pressure pot creativity, that sort of crucibleness.
Totally. And it's all just mapped up on a board, you know, with beat by beat by beat, and we're shifting things around as it goes. And I mean, it's all Trey's the guy, you know. Mm-hmm. It's how his brain works. So we just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk until Trey goes, okay, I've got it, you know. Mm-hmm. And then he goes off, and I mean, he's the only, you know, I didn't write, you know, I talked on South Park, like I consulted, they would say, you know, Trey's the only one who's actually, you know, writing words on a page.
Mm.
Yeah.
So apart from the sort of validation of the creative process, what did you learn from being part of that group?
I mean, yeah, just to not look down on my own process was the biggest thing. And then just to, God, just to follow the funny, they're so fearless about that, you know? Like, and I'm learning that at Fringe here, too, that, like, it really is, an audience reacts to whatever I am enjoying the most,
mm-hmm.
right? So when I'm having the best time, whether or not it's objectively stupid or whatever, if I'm having a good time, they're having a good time. And sometimes, even in the room, sometimes they would start a joke that my critical brain is like, is you know, is going, really? That's the thing you're going to go with? And like, what do I know? You know, these guys would do this 20 years. But the point is, if they find it funny, if it makes them go, you know, it makes you snigger, then you just keep going with that. And that's going to come across, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would you say would be the best advice outside of the South Park room, best advice you've had for writing comedy or your composition or things like that?
Yeah.
And what is the worst advice you've had?
Oh, wow. That has been like given to me?
Yes. Or that you've encountered.
I don't know. I mean, I'm finding it's like, get together with your friends is really good advice.
Yeah.
Get together with people you like, because, you know, I had this idea of writing as a thing that had to be done alone in a room, feeling quite sad,
yeah,
and quite melancholic about your life and your choices, but driven to be a writer, you know,
Ernest Hemingway,
have to take up a drinking habit and really feel, get in touch with that sadness. But then every time I'm with friends, it's like, It's just flowing, you know, and suddenly here ideas should just pop up in conversation. And it's like panning for gold, you know.
Yeah.
It's you have to be there to grab them when they show up. Most of it's dirt, but sometimes those nuggets come out and you're like, oh, hang on to that, you know. And I don't know, I think I've had a chip on my shoulder sometimes about needing to be the, I need to be the origin of this idea, you know?
need to be my baby.
Yes, like, because if you don't feel creatively, like, secure, then, you know, I just need to be the one to generate something so I feel like I'm worthwhile as a creative, and then I'll go back to collaborating with other people, you know? But I'm a collaborative spirit, like, that's the type of person I've always been, so it's, I was cutting myself off from this essential part of the thing. So yeah, just get together with your friends is good advice. And yeah, be alone is terrible advice. Don't be alone with yourself. No, it's a balance. It's a balance.
So for the uninitiated, who or what is StarKid?
Fully uninitiated?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so StarKid is a cult.
Is there going to be a book of StarKid musical coming out?
Get the book, yeah. Probably one day. We'll have parodied everything else by then. I mean, it genuinely is just a group of friends who made a Harry Potter musical at uni. We thought it'd be just funny to have a musical about Harry Potter with singing characters. We all really liked the books, you know. So we did it, and I got asked to write like half the songs because... Once again, there was a deadline, and Darren Criss, you know, was like, it's a lot of songs to write in a short amount of time. Can you take some on, too? I'm like, sure. And all that came together at the last minute. There were songs being written the day before, you know, and then put it up on YouTube for our friends and family and ended up blowing up, as the story goes. And before long, we went, oh, we better take this down and edit it a little better and take out some of the dirtier bits, put it back up because it's getting a wider audience than we anticipated. And then one of the lines in the show was StarKid Potter. And so they ended up calling the company StarKid, and over the last 10 years have produced, got 11 or 12 full length musicals with various writing teams, but with a central ensemble cast and a central like book writing team. Yeah, they're really funny storytellers, man. We just had this concert in LA at the theater at the Ace Hotel, three shows there. Mm. Had a 13-piece orchestra that I was conducting and playing with, which was really cool, including Jack Stratton from Wolfpack, mm-hmm. which is this famous band, but he was our drummer in college, so he came back and played with us, and like 30 to 40 StarKid cast members all came back and were a part of this like decade celebration. And there are still StarKid fans in the audience that are just still feeling the fervor and still have StarKid fervor. And they're new, like 17-year-old, 14-year-old people that are new fans to it, that are seemingly just now discovering it, which is wild. You know, it just takes on a life of its own. And it's selling me tickets here. I mean, StarKid is like still the thing beyond Book of Mormon, beyond South Park. StarKid, man.
Yeah.
Is the thing that people come up and say, hey, I love you from this.
It's hard to overstate how wildly successful that has become.
Totally. Totally. It's crazy.
So is that what I saw you were working on something new for StarKid. You talked about having StarKid on your mind as you were arriving in Edinburgh on Twitter. Is that something new you're working on at the moment, or was that the 13-piece one you were referring
to? That was the 13-piece one. That took up every waking second of life for the last few weeks right before Edinburgh, which was more the reason why my show took a backseat. I kind of got here and went, uh-oh, better figure out a show.
And then walk up to the microphone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, genuinely, some great jokes were written in that moment. but there is another StarKid show that my lyricist Kaylee McMahon and I are slowly working on.
Amazing. Is this a scoop? Is this an exclusive?
Sure. Wonderful. Yeah, I don't know if I've talked about it on a podcast yet.
Let's say not.
No, definitely not on a podcast.
You can't again after this.
Yeah.
This is the sole publicity for whatever they show.
Verbally binding?
Yes.
Yeah.
What can you say about it?
Well, not much. Terrible exclusive. Just that it's another show that we're working on with Nick and Matt, who I would say are the Matt and Trey of StarKid for sure.
Mm-hmm.
They're brothers, Nick and Matt Lang. And yeah, it's we haven't written a show with them since Twisted in 2013, but I love writing with them. So yeah, it's early. It's very early days, so I can't really say title or topic or anything.
Do you have a title and topic?
Yeah.
That you just got? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's very exciting. So the wheels are very much in motion on it.
Mm-hmm. They're working on the story, and they've been talking us through, and the music writing hasn't started yet, but it's getting to a place where probably as soon as Fringe is done, we'll start cooking on that.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. That's very exciting. And so when would that be? When might we be able to see that?
Oh, gosh, I'm not sure. We've sort of decided to move a little slower with this one, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, anything could happen. But yeah, I don't want to make any promises, but it could be as early as next year. We might wait a couple of years. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Need an exact date, open time.
Well, it's funny. I mean, musicals usually take like 5 or 6 years to germinate, you know, and the Star Kid model is more like 6 months.
Yeah.
So Kaylee and I are you know, entrenched in this sort of old world model of how musicals grow and develop. And the Star Kid guys are a lot more quicker and with the viral world and everything. So we sort of try and meet in the middle. But, you know, deadlines are so helpful because at the end of the day, something exists or it doesn't. So it's just so satisfying to get it out in the world that you always go, it could have been a little more prepared, or it could have been if we just had more time to take it slower. But it's like at the end of the day, at least you made it, you know, at least you had the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned before about being in the South Park writers' rooms with people like Bill Hader and Josh Gad,
who dropped those names right out there. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, they were my idols growing up. What were your inspirations growing up in the world of comedy?
In the world of comedy, I mean, I started as a musical theater nerd. Let's be very clear. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, Stephen Sondheim was my idol, you know, and still is very much.
What is your favorite Sondheim, and why is it?
Oh
company?
Gosh. And why is it Company? No. Company's great. It's not my favorite, but it's up there. Sweeney Todd's probably my favorite. Yeah. That's just, God, I remember seeing it at a college. I saw UC Irvine in high school, and I was just breathless, you know. I remember getting the original, like, double disc CDs and putting them in our desktop computer downstairs with Windows 98 and following along with my best friend Jema through the little booklet, through the libretto, like the entire show. Wow. And at the end, spoilers, when he tosses Mrs. Lovett into the furnace, I was just freaking out, you know, not even with a video, just listening. I mean, that story really feels like we were huddled around a fire listening to the radio, you know. It's fucking olden days. And I love Sunday in the Park with George as well, just because it's so about, I mean, that whole show is just full of poetry. It's just about being a creative and being a writer and what it is to have that distance with the world and what it, you know, it's beautiful. Every line of that is just beautiful. Mm. Company's awesome as well. I just wasn't married as a kid, so I didn't have much to relate to that. But Sondheim wasn't married either, and he was able to write Company, which is the most incredible thing of all, that he just interviewed, you know, his friend about being, what being married was like, and wrote it from that.
I found it purely by chance because I'm a big Stephen Colbert fan.
Oh,
and
sure.
And he did a weekend of it.
Yeah.
And I then discovered Sondheim through Stephen Colbert, which is a very circuitous way
right,
to get into
he,
it.
Right, he was in Company.
He was.
Yeah, yeah.
With John Cryer.
Right.
And Patti LuBone.
Yes, totally, totally.
And Christina Hendricks and NPH,
mm-hmm,
which
mm-hmm.
is the most eclectic range of names to answer into any project.
Yeah, sounds like a cast I want to see, though, for sure.
Have you seen the...
No, but I've seen clips from that one, but
it's all on YouTube, the last
Is it really?
The whole show.
Oh, wow, I got to check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love Colbert. I mean, his new show's great. I loved his old show.
Yeah.
And I was a huge Jon Stewart fan as well, obviously. Gosh, I mean, who you know... Growing up, I would honestly just watch whoever was on Comedy Central, like those half-hour specials, you know? I mean, I watched all the ones you watched as a kid. I watched Dane Cook, Mitch Hedberg, Stephen Wright, you know? Got into Brian Regan, got into more these days, like Tim Minchin and Stephen Lynch with the musical side, you know, seeing like, okay, that can be done.
Do you remember the first joke or the first song you wrote?
That I wrote?
Mm.
There's a song called... There's this song called The Same that I wrote when I was like 14. It was like my first quote-unquote pop song that I was trying to write. And I sent it to my friends, Kaylee, who's now my lyricist, and Jamo, who's my best friend. I was reading Sweeney Wish. And they still just make fun of me mercilessly to this day. It put me off writing pop songs for a solid decade. That response... The first line, just give you a taste, it was like this Ben Foldsy, like, dun, 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 dun. First line is, where are we now? You thought you figured me out. It's like quite emo and
intense.
Quite feeling, very intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you feel a lot at 14. You know?
You do.
Yeah.
Dressed all in black, presumably.
Oh, every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like heavy on the mascara, too.
Mm-hmm. Quite, that was me. A little bright, shiny musical theater mascara, dark emo boy, yeah.
Talking of the sort of early phrase into it, what was your favorite book growing up? What was your favorite story?
I mean, Harry Potter, for sure. I would go wait at midnight and when the new books were released at Barnes & Noble and, like, get in line the night that they came out.
Did you dress up?
No, I didn't dress up. But I've never been a dress-up guy. I don't know.
Even in your emo phase?
Even in my emo phase. Yeah, no, I didn't really, you know... Yeah, it's all mental. Like, I hate Halloween. I know it's unpopular. Well, do you guys even do Halloween?
We have Halloween.
We have Halloween.
We're familiar.
You guys heard of this thing? It's crazy. Everyone gives out candy. It's nuts.
It's the opposite of capitalism. I don't understand why it took off in all countries. Yeah, the USA.
Exactly. Exactly. No, I guess my reason has always been, like, I dress up for a living. Why would I want to dress up for a holiday? Why would I want to dress up for fun? You know? Of course, that's why my friends all got into this, because they like playing dress up. Getting in costume is my least favorite part. That's why I've now invented a show where I can just wear my street clothes into it, and it works totally fine. No makeup, no costumes, hell yeah.
You're not going on, like, full Ziggy Stardust with, like, cape and platform boots.
That's not my vibe. My vibe is, like, that was all the false pretense that I was made to do in commercial musical theater for the last 5 years. So now here's just authentic, stripped down me. How exciting is that?
And it's strange that you're wearing a cape for this interview.
Well, that's just for home. I thought we weren't going to talk about that.
But I know it's part of your... I had to sign the NDA, but I felt obliged to honest to the listeners.
You're going to have to edit that out. Right? Okay, well... I'm not comfortable with that.
All right. Well, I know your lawyers are now writing something now.
Well, yeah, they sit with me always, and they're drafting something now.
Furiously. There'll just be like a long beep in the recording now, and then so no capes in the words of Edna Mode.
Okay, we're gonna have to edit that out too.
Oh, yeah. We're gonna have 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
Actually, that brings me on to my final two questions.
Oh, wow. Two questions. This has flown by.
Well, we can go on for another hour and a half if you want. You've got a show to do.
Oh, that's true. You gotta get out of here.
Was there a particular teacher growing up that really inspired your love of all that we've talked about?
Yeah, I had a few really beautiful teachers, honestly, but Sherry Coben, who was actually, you know, I've been talking about Jema, my best friend, is watching and listening to Sweeney with, and Kaylee McMahon is my lyricist. This is their mom. Was our improv coach in high school. Wow. We did comedy sports, and starting in elementary school, even middle school, I was over, like, at their house all the time, and they're the ones who introduced me to Sondheim in the first place. And showed me all these movies I hadn't seen from olden days, you know, really gave me an education and just gave me a sense of, what's it called? Taste. helped me, you know, whatever I was going through would talk it through with me, and was really, they were just always there. And Sherry taught me so much. Yeah. And is still there texting me about my show. I would go over and write my show at her house sometimes, even when I was desperately avoiding my show, which I was basically until I got here. She would just give me prompts and ask me questions and really help me parse it all out. So, yeah, she taught me so much growing up and continues to teach me stuff every day. I mean, not an exaggeration. Yeah. So grateful for that whole family in my life.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild. They moved out to Agora Hills, you know, when I was very young from New Jersey, and ended up just being around the corner from me. So I would just always literally walk around the block, and there they were, this second home, you know.
Oh, so lovely.
Yeah.
Have you told them this?
I think they know. I think they know. But I'm sure they'll hear this as well and hopefully be
quite... I know they're big fans.
Quite chuffed.
So it's they'll love the... They're quite chuffed, yes. Good British expression. Thank
you.
Just then.
Thank you.
That did not go unnoticed.
And they're total Anglophiles as well. Especially Kaylee, I should pimp. She has a podcast of her own called Anglophilia, where she just goes through different British comedies and talks for hours about these... about every single one of them. And she's just one of the most brilliant people in the world. So that's quite good.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, I am available. Should she wish to?
Oh, lovely, yes. I don't know if she's ever had a guest on it. She's just heard her co-host Stephanie talking about, like, one episode is about Fawlty Towers, and they do an episode about The Office, and they do an episode about Blackadder. You know, they just do different episodes about each show.
It's never not strange to hear those names in an American accent, because we're raised as you're sort of on a plinth. A pedestal.
Sort of like an Arthur's seat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look at you with your topical references.
Well, you know, I've been here a couple of weeks now.
Yeah, you've done your homework. You've read the briefing papers.
I've walked around.
Yeah. Do you have a particular favourite British show?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, I The Office is my favorite TV show of all time. Yeah.
It's done all right.
It's done all right. Yeah, it's okay. I mean, the British one, you know. I mean, the American one's quite hysterical as well. Like, I've gotten into that too. But yeah, the British one just makes me weep. I mean, God, it's just... Oh, God, that when you finally see that Christmas special, it just tugs at your heartstrings. It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah, and I love Fawlty Towers as well. I love Monty Python. The Office. Man. Oh, I love League of Gentlemen as well. They introduced me to that. You know League of Gentlemen?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a niche one for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the type of stuff they were showing me.
Wow.
When I was in high school, you know?
Well, showing you like League of Gentlemen at such a young age.
Yeah.
It's good you've come out the way you
have. Yeah.
It could have gone terribly, terribly wrong.
I think they probably still have it. They would actually film people's reactions to a one particular part in the third season. I can go into it probably. It's not spoilers at this point when they start doing the massage parlor scenes. I don't know if you've seen those.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would just, they would have a camera ready not to watch the TV, but to watch you watch this scene. So they would just put a montage together of everyone's reactions to that part. It's quite good. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, that brings me on to a very broad final question.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, how important is story to comedy?
I think it depends on the type of comedy. I mean, for my type of comedy, it's integral. Mm-hmm. Integral. It's integral.
You okay?
I'm all right. Yeah, okay. I'm having a mini episode, but I'm fine. Yeah, I mean, the thing that, you know, Mormon instilled, which was very much in the Mike Nichols sort of school of directorial thought, which has always stuck with me is, you know, don't ask for the laugh, ask for the spoon. You know, whatever the thing you're engaged in is, like, ask for that, be a part of that, don't be commenting on it, don't be trying to go get that laugh from the audience, because it comes off like you're wanting it, and, mm-hmm. and you can smell that a mile away. Reeks of desperation. Yeah, take the comedy from the story. And of course, when you get on a comedy stage, anything, you know, as I am now, even anything that's half billed as comedy, I just want to start going for laughs, because laughs are crack. Yeah. And the audience is giving you crack. And you're like, let's get some more crack.
And paying you for the privilege.
Yes, and which is better than crack. But but it all works out. You know, you want it, it's very tempting to go for that. And, it's so much more satisfying for everybody when you return to what is the actual story you're trying to tell? What are we actually trying to communicate here? And then the laughs just show up, you know, because life is inherently funny, and being self-aware is inherently funny. So it's always, telling your ego, like, calm down. Yes, the laughs will come, but don't deflect all the time. Like, allow yourself to go into the story and actually tell one. But then I see some clowns do it, and I'm like, I don't know if that's the same for them. I don't know. I think some people are really good at that external comedy where they're just going for things, and that becomes the game in itself. You know, it's like someone just so desperate for your attention and for your laughs, and then watching them fail and watching them struggle and then get back on the horse. But I suppose even that, just to contradict my own point, even that's a story in itself there, where the real fun is watching them fail and then have it panic and try and get out of it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the story that they're engaged in, instead of just going for laughs. So I don't know. Yeah. I think for me, story is always where it goes back to. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, best of luck with the continued run of the show. You're here for the full month?
I'm here for the full month, every day. I got a show in... What time is it?
It's 10 to 2.
Yeah, in 2 hours I got a show. Okay. Every day at 4:30, Underbelly Cowgate. I don't know when this comes out. It's probably over, but stick around. I'll hopefully you'll bring my show some other places.
Yeah, I hope you're going to tour it and give more people the chance to see it.
I hope so, too. I have no idea. I've barely thought past right now. So we'll figure it out, but
this is clearly
right
the highlight of your day.
Oh, definitely. So far.
Well, wonderful. We've got the trailer for this episode then.
Good.
AJ, thank you so much. This has been an absolute joy.
Likewise. The pleasure's all mine. Thank you, man.
Thank you so much.